Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
MSW Media.
The rule of law is not just some lawyer's turn of phrase. It is the very foundation of our democracy. The essence of the rule of law is that like cases are treated alike. That there not be one rule for Democrats and another for Republicans, one rule for the powerful, another for the powerless, one rule for the rich and another for the poor, or different rules depending upon one's race or ethnicity. To serve as Attorney General at this critical time is a calling I am honored and eager to answer.
So yeah, now it's clean up on aisle 45 time. And for a long while yet, it is going to be clean up on aisle 45.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 164 of Clean Up on Aisle 45. It's Wednesday, March 13th, 2024. I'm Allison Gill.
And I'm Pete Strzok. We got lots to talk about today, including the surety bond in the E.G. and Carroll case. Pete Navarro having to report to prison in six days. And updates on Steve Bannon, the Trump Manhattan trial that starts in 12 days, and the latest in the Fulton County RICO case against Trump and his co-defendants.
Ah, yes. Plus, we have new charges against another former military guy that stole and transmitted top secret national defense information. The Arizona prosecution of the fraudulent electors scheme is nearing a conclusion. A new order from the judge in the Hunter Biden criminal gun charge case, and a letter from congressional Democrats about the DHS Inspector General, Mr. Kufari. But first, we have new patrons to thank. Thank you so much. Lynn Rowley, if I'm pronouncing that wrong, please let me know. Stefano Natella, Tamsin Watton, Thomas G. McClelland, Scott Underkoffler, and Andrew Linares. Thank you so much. We couldn't do this without you. We really appreciate your patronage, and thanks for supporting independent media. All right, Pete, where should we start?
Well, you know what? Let's go up to New York with the E. Jean Carroll defamation case. Now, by now, you've heard that Donald Trump was able to get a bond to halt collection pending his appeal. Now, the bond he was able to obtain was secured by a subsidiary of the Chubb Group, which is a large international insurance and reinsurance company. Notably, the CEO of the Chubb Group, Trump happened to appoint to a position in his administration back in 2018. So there's a little bit of a history there between Trump and the CEO. This is a smaller subsidiary, again, of the company up in the New Jersey area. But of note, Chubb wanted in the details of this bond 60 days or more to pay the bond to E. Jean Carroll if she prevailed in the appeal. But Robbie Kaplan was able to amend that language. And based on that, she and they are not going to contest the bond application. Now, the bond is only secured by Chubb through the Second Circuit in the sort of appeal process. So if E. Jean prevails at the Second Circuit level and Trump decides to appeal to the Supreme Court, he's going to have to find someone else to secure the bond during that time it's pending appeal to the Supreme Court. Now, it's interesting, before we move on from there, we've talked about this and we can talk about it in the bonus episode. I am deeply worried that anytime the amount of information we don't have about this bond, which is approaching, $91 million and change, while we know it's through Chubb, what we don't know is any of the circumstances and details behind that. We don't know if Trump put up collateral, and if so, what kind, and if so, how much, if there were co-signers or other guarantors. There's so much that is unknown, and particularly in the context of somebody who's running for president, the amount of leverage that somebody could obtain for $91 million, let alone the $400-plus million he's going to have to get down the road here shortly for his business judgment, it makes me really, really uneasy. And, you know, particularly having spent a career looking at people who place the national security in jeopardy, people who represent security risks, huge debt like this is a massive red flag. It is sufficient to keep you, I mean, a hundredth of this, right? Somebody has some odd $400,000 beyond their income. It is enough to deny giving somebody a clearance. So the notion that there's this $90 million sort of floating out there in the ether that nobody knows, did Elon co-sign when he made that? Did he agree to that when he made a trip to Mar-a-Lago? Did Trump call one of his Saudi buddies connected to LIV Golf and get them to agree to co-sign? We have no idea. None whatsoever. And so I hope this is the kind of thing that, you know, I guarantee you, much like Trump, despite saying he would release his taxes, never did, this is going to be the same thing. And absent reporters hounding him to release it, I don't know that we'll ever find out just what's behind this, you know, nearly $100 million.
Yeah. And that's kind of what keeps me up at night too, right? Is what is this secured with? As we know, he can't use, like, if he's trying to like use property as collateral, that property can't have liens or loans against it. It has to be what they call unencumbered. Right. So like if, like, let's say Mar-a-Lago is worth $30 million and he's got a $15 million loan out on it or a lien on it, then that leaves only $15 million of available equity to put up as collateral. We don't know if he's using the shares, the shares he's trying to dilute in the Trump management and media company that owns Truth Social.
Yeah, that's a priceless media empire. Who would not want to place their podcasts, their songs, their tweets on the Trump social media that just value beyond comprehension?
Right. We don't know if Jared Kushner co-signed on his loan with his $2 billion from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia that he received against the warnings of the monetary fund in Saudi Arabia saying, don't give your money to Jared Kushner. He has no idea. He's not a professional investor. And then, of course, MBS went against the advice of the wealth fund in Saudi Arabia to send him $2 billion. Maybe he co-signed. I really don't have any idea, but we should, because like you said, being indebted like that to whom you're indebted could, you know, make it very dicey for you to be president of the United States. I think the voters should know. But like you said, without some reporter digging at it and getting it out there, there's nothing, I think, in the law here that requires him to disclose that.
Yeah. And look, Trump, he is such a swindler. He is so greedy. The prospect of him signing over any tangible property, I think, is next to zero. So I would anticipate he's promised favors. He's made some sort of agreement to get somebody else or some other bank or somebody, like some nebulous valuation of worth somewhere, to co-sign for that. And, you know, somebody pointed out that, look, if you're going to put up properties, that will show up in the public record, right? I mean, if there's a lien placed on something, people know where these properties are. People can go check out the sort of real estate records and anything that, if, you know, there has been a lien or something placed against those properties, that will show up in the public record. And so I'm hopeful that, you know, enterprising independent media at a minimum are going out there and, you know, checking the Bedminster property records, checking the Mar-a-Lago property records down in Florida, checking the New York City property records to see if anything shows up there. But Trump is such a, at the end of the day, it is so much about his money. I think his real estate holdings are way too much of a, it's too painful for him to give up. And which consequently is why we have that horrible security prospect that he has made some deal with somebody. Right? When I'm reelected, I'll make sure that you get X, Y, and Z. And that's the value that he's pledged for somebody to co-sign, which makes it all the more important that we know what it is.
And people have been indicted for those kinds of things, including Stephen Calk. But I think the Department of Justice might look a little different this time were to Trump win in November. Next up, Donald Trump has filed for presidential immunity in his March 25th criminal trial in Manhattan for the alleged crimes he committed way before he was president. This is from Joyce Vance. Trump is trying to avoid going to trial in Manhattan on March 25th, trying to tie the case up in a presidential immunity argument. But none of the conduct here involves the presidency. It's about the campaign and his private business. But here's something that she brings up that's really important. She says, in any event, Trump waived immunity in this case, as Judge Hellerstein found in an opinion last July that Trump dismissed his appeal on. In a July 19th order, Judge Hellerstein noted Trump waived presidential immunity. Although Trump initially appealed, he subsequently dismissed that appeal. And Todd Blanche, Trump's lawyer, filed this in November of 2023, saying Donald J. Trump, by and through undersigned counsel, respectfully moves this court to dismiss his appeal in this case. Upon information and belief, to date, the government has not borne any costs in this matter. The motion to dismiss his appeal left Judge Hellerstein's decision that Trump waived immunity in place. So I don't see this going anywhere, particularly in the New York courts. I think he's just kind of doing what he tried to do down in Mar-a-Lago when he filed his immunity briefing there. So the Supreme Court is deciding whether or not I'm immune. All those crimes, the alleged crimes, I should say, happened after he left office. And same, well, not the same here in Manhattan. Those crimes took place before he was even elected president. He waived immunity in this case and didn't appeal a judgment saying as much. So I don't think he's got anywhere to go.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, look, in the same case, Judge Merchan ordered last Thursday that Trump, quote, has an extensive history of publicly and repeatedly attacking trial jurors and grand jurors, unquote. And that therefore, Merchan said that he is going to anonymize the jury in the case. Now, obviously, Trump denies the charges and described it as, what else, a political witch hunt. But in his protective order, Judge Merchan said the decision to keep the jury anonymous is appropriate because, quote, this is from his order, there is a likelihood of bribery, jury tampering, or a physical injury or harassment of jurors, unquote. Prosecutors had asked for the jurors' identities to be shielded, which is a rare request that is mostly made in high-profile cases or ones involving the mafia and other violent organizations, not unlike the upcoming Trump trial. But the trial, which could last around 6 weeks, could affect Mr. Trump's ability to campaign for the White House ahead of the November election. Jury selection is expected to be one of the most contentious and time-consuming portions of the trial. Now, bench trials for felony charges in New York require 12 jurors with up to 6 alternates.
And it's important to note that just because these jurors are anonymous, it doesn't mean that Trump and his lawyers will know the jurors' names and their addresses and all that other stuff. They just can't be released to the public. I hope they have a jury seated by the time we get there, Pete, April 1st.
Yeah, well, yeah, you would hope, right? What is that, a week and a half? So we'll, you know, God willing.
A week, yeah.
They got one seated for the...
Eugene.
What, case. For Eugene, right? Including one person who apparently was getting his news, although I guess they struck him, right? Didn't he say he was getting his news from, where was
news
it? It wasn't
Max
Breitbart.
Or OAN or something.
OAN or something like that, yeah. So hopefully there's a... They on the government side, somebody a little savvy about online sources of information and, you know, which of those fall on the extremes. And hey, look, if you're getting your news from a crazy left-wing extreme publication, probably don't particularly want you on the jury either. But just let's try and stick to people who have a sane grasp on the truth and reality, and we'll be just fine.
Yeah. And although those, you know, the jurors there were, that was a civil case. You didn't need 12 and 6 alternates. This is a criminal case. So we'll see. Maybe hopefully we'll have a jury seated by the time we get there. If not, we'll get to see some of the process of jury selection, which is also extremely interesting, given the fact that the judge is like, these people will be in danger of physical injury and harassment if we don't anonymize them. So just weeks before the start of this historic criminal trial, Alvin Bragg made a surprising decision to set aside a potentially potent piece of evidence. Prosecutors will try to convict the former president without referring to an admission made by Rudy Giuliani on Hannity. Appearing on Sean Hannity's show on May 2nd, 2018, Giuliani told Fox News viewers that Trump knew about the hush money payments to Stormy Daniels, which is an important point that prosecutors will need to prove at trial, but they aren't going to use that as evidence. So why did Bragg decide not to show the interview during his case in chief? Well, legal analysts believe pushing to introduce the evidence could have compromised any conviction of Trump on appeal. And Bragg already showed he has stronger evidence at his disposal from the former president himself. According to Politico, Giuliani got hammered and then appeared on Hannity that night. Everybody made fun of it. They were like, oh, he's drunk. I think Colbert talked about him being, you know, in a few sheets, three sheets to the wind, saying at the time, President Trump did know about the general arrangement that Cohen would take care of things like this. And later in the show, Giuliani noted that Cohen funneled his $130,000 payoff to a law firm and revealed for the first time that Trump reimbursed him. Now, Brian Buckmeyer, a longtime public defender and practicing trial attorney, believed Trump's attorneys had a solid argument to exclude these statements because he was housed. And it was one that he would make in their position. This lawyer says, I would do that too, but added that Bragg's decision to leave out that piece of evidence rather than push the issue before Manhattan Supreme Court Justice Juan Merchan may cause some concern for Trump's legal team. It's not a good sign that Alvin Bragg doesn't need to include this. Quote, as a defense attorney, my instincts are asking, do they have something better? That's what Buckmeyer asked. Now we'll have more about Rudy and you know, in a different legal problem, but we do have to take a quick break first. So before we get to that story, we're going to do that. Stick around. We'll be right back.
My name is Molly, and I'm a political science major at Kent State University. Kent State has these core values, kindness, respect, and purpose in all we do. Ever since I was old enough to understand the legal system, I've wanted to help serve justice, and I would like to be a prosecutor for the city of Cleveland and then hopefully move up to the county in the Justice Center downtown. Kindness and respect go a long way. As a prosecutor, you have to be kind to all parties of the courtroom to truly help everybody involved.
That? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like.
X-Go, give it to you.
How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Biosonic sound experience. That's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it?
X-Go, give it to you.
Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S.
Give up.
Order now at Acura.com.
We're putting our foot down to keep our feet up, like way up, with Lazy Boy. Our phones will be set to Do Not Disturb, our podcast to full volume, and our sofas to recline. After a full day of doing a lot of adulting, the only thing we'll be doing is a lot of nothing. It's all right to take time for our well-deserved lazy time. We, the lazy, are taking back lazy, all from the comfort of our Lazy Boy furniture. Lazy Boy. Long live the lazy.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey, welcome back. We have some more new patrons to thank. Big Missy, Carl Braun, Bruce Hendrickson, Cindy Wemet or Oymet, Shannon Stitt, OMG WTF GOP, and M85. Thank all of you so much for your support. You make this go. You allow us to bring all this news to you and to go and, you know, report from the trial of Trump up in New York. So thank you so much for your support. You know, Allison, you did talk about some more Rudy news. And before I go to that, I just want to highlight, you know, the whole point about you just made where that Buckmeyer saying, as a defense attorney, my instincts are asking, do we have something better? Everybody should stop and listen to that very carefully, because the fact of the matter is that highlights a very real practice in trials, and that is that both sides use a little bit of gamesmanship. They don't show their entire hand. They have witnesses people don't know about. All the more reason when you look at Judge Eileen Cannon down in fucking Florida asking the government, when are you going to publish your witness list? No, that's not the way it works. That's not the way it works. And that's exactly why you have this defense attorney, Buckmeyer, saying, hey, the hair on the back of my neck is standing up as a seasoned defense attorney. I know that maybe they have something there. Yes, as does every prosecutor and defense attorney in the United States of America, except for apparently Judge Eileen Cannon, who wants the government to just turn over all your witnesses. When? How soon? Now? When? It's absurd. And it's just, again, you know, another point about she is out of her depth. She, frankly, I think has a partisan agenda, and those two things together are just lethal. But
I think she'll actually do the right thing. I think she wants to avoid being embarrassed by the 11th Circuit again. So I think she'll probably, you know, in her ruling, she'll be like, the DOJ, you're stupid and ugly and your family is dumb, but I'm going to rule in your favor. Like, that's how she operates. So we'll see what ends up happening.
Yeah. I hope you're right. I hope you're right. But talking, as you said, speaking about more Rudy news, this story is from the New Republic. Attorneys for Rudy Giuliani's creditors negotiating his Chapter 11 bankruptcy filed a request on Thursday demanding that Giuliani reveal his financial secrets, including details on his cable TV earnings, the origin of his legal defense fund led by his son Andrew, and even the nature of his work for Trump. The far-reaching order is only possible thanks to allegations that Giuliani participated in what the court termed discovery misconduct. That is to say, he failed to spill all the beans the first time around when he was sued by Ruby Freeman and Shea Moss. Quote, this is from the motion, indeed, it was Giuliani's discovery misconduct in the Freeman litigation concerning Giuliani's defamatory statements about two Georgia 2020 election workers that led U.S. District Court Judge Beryl A. Howell to enter a $148 million default judgment against Giuliani, reads the motion obtained by Law and Crime. Judge Howell found Giuliani's misconduct in the Freeman litigation so egregious that she further ordered immediate dissolution of the automatic 30-day stay of enforcement of the judgment, allowing the plaintiffs in the Freeman litigation to take immediate steps to enforce the judgment, the motion continued, noting that Giuliani's, quote, willful shirking of his discovery obligations, unquote, effectively lost him the case by default.
So now they are demanding the information that Rudy failed to hand over in discovery. They're doing this in the bankruptcy case, and he's filed bankruptcy so he could get an automatic stay to avoid them collecting this judgment for a bit of a time, because as we know, that $148 million isn't subject to bankruptcy, but this has to go through bankruptcy court first. And now they're saying, and rightfully so, hey, this guy needs to tell you where his money is and how much money he has, as we're going forward in this bankruptcy case, because the reason that we get to demand this is because he was not forthcoming in the discovery in the Ruby Freeman Shea Moss case. So interesting. We'll see if we get Rudy's secrets about his finances. Let's stay in New York with this story from Jose Pagliari at the Daily Beast. He writes, for 2 years, Steve Bannon has refused to pay the $500,000 he owes to his former lawyer. And now his refusal to settle those old debts has exposed him and his current attorney to potential sanctions. Quote, Bannon, with the aid of his counsel, has for months done nothing but intentionally stall and delay plaintiff's enforcement of its valid money judgment. That's what the law firm that previously represented Bannon wrote to a New York State judge last month, employing an underline to show their heightened frustration. They underlined it and bolded it. Bannon, who was once Trump's White House chief strategist and played an active role in the former president's January 6th coup attempt, is already trapped in a precarious position. He's a convict trying to avoid serving his four-month prison sentence for ignoring a congressional subpoena that sought to question him over his role in the MAGA insurrection. And the Manhattan District Attorney is putting him on trial in May for duping nativist donors to the We Build the Wall scheme. They wanted to support a privately funded U.S.-Mexico border wall. But now he's making it worse on himself, Bannon is. It's been 7 months since a New York State judge ordered the conspiracy-spewing right-wing political agitator to pay the $484,000 he owed the defense lawyer that he stiffed. That's Bob Costello. But since then, according to court filings, Bannon has been dodging the ordered judgment and ignoring follow-up subpoenas. In its attempt to get a readout of Bannon's personal finances and his ability to pay, the law firm tried to question him under oath and sent subpoenas to learn more about his businesses and what's in his personal bank accounts. And emails show that Bannon's new lawyer, Harlan Protas, initially agreed in November to schedule a deposition and turn over materials, provided that they first sign a simple and straightforward confidentiality agreement. But then, in January, Bannon put up resistance and claimed he couldn't possibly answer questions or turn over bank records, because doing so would potentially reveal evidence of fraud that could ruin his attempt to overturn his federal conviction or even bolster the Manhattan DA's case against him. Again, he's pleading the fifth, basically. I can't hand over all my finances. You'll find more crimes. Wow, that's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it works for him.
Yeah, and so we've got a quick update, this time down in Fulton County, as we're waiting on Judge McAfee's decision on whether or not to disqualify District Attorney Fonnie Willis and remove her and her office from the case. Now, we may have that decision by the time this episode airs. We're expecting it, nevertheless, this week, even maybe by, at a minimum by Friday. But in the meantime, from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the Fulton County Board of Ethics has determined it does not have jurisdiction to hear two complaints against DA Fonnie Willis, a finding that undermines defense attorney's contention that the DA violated county ethics rules in the interference case. The ethics board on Thursday was set to hear two complaints related to allegations that Willis had an improper romantic relationship with special prosecutor Nathan Wade and should be disqualified from the case against former President Donald Trump and 14 others. But when the meeting convened, Chairman Daraka Satcher announced the board did not have jurisdiction over the complaints because Willis is a state constitutional officer, not a county official subject to the ethics code. So, you know, that's, you know, I'm hopeful. I think everybody's looking at the, you know, Judge McAfee, and the question at the end of the day that I think everybody's boiled it down to is what standard he decides to apply. And that if he goes with anything other than an appearance of bias, that she's fine, that there's not a case there. There doesn't seem to be a lot of historical argument to support that appearance of conflict. But, you know, that's obviously up to him. And I don't know. Maybe you'll know it as you listen to this, but I wouldn't be surprised if it comes out Thursday or Friday. We'll know soon enough.
Well, I have some good news, though.
What's that?
Your good friend Pete Navarro.
Yes.
He has to report to prison on March 19th. That's 6 days from now. To serve his 4-month term. You know, we were talking about Bannon a second ago. He's still he got out. Judge Nichols let him out during the pendency of his appeal of his contempt of Congress conviction and sentencing.
5 days in a wake up. You know, it was interesting, and I sent this to you earlier by a text. We were going back and forth. He is scheduled, according to the Bureau of Prisons, to show up FCI Miami, which is the Federal Correctional Institute in Miami. Interestingly enough, you can go on the BOP website and go to the various FCIs. And if you go to Miami, you can get the Miami commissary list. Now, granted, it's a little old, Allison. This, the one they have published online, is back from November in 2018. But you can see what you can order and the limitations. For instance, there's a limit. You can get 50 cent forever stamps. You can get a maximum of 20. But what's really interesting is if you go down to the food items, it's interesting because you can get for $1.50 a little packet of garlic powder. For $1.05, you can get lemon mackerel. For $1.95, yellowfin tuna steak. Now, granted, I read that and I was outraged. And I think I said, what the hell kind of, you know, prison is this? But reflecting on that price point of $1.95, this is not sashimi grade flown in from Tokyo overnight on an airplane. I guarantee you this is probably tinned, canned sushi. Gas station yellowfin, not even that. Like the little thing with, like, you know, used to back in the day, you may remember this and some of our like-aged listeners, it would be like that little tin and it had a key that was like welded to the bottom and you'd pop it off and you'd put like the corner in this little slot and you'd roll it open and inevitably cut the hell out of your fingers and blood on the sardines or whatever it was. But that is what I'm thinking. But if he doesn't want tuna, for $2.05, he can get pepperoni, up to 10 items. $1.40 chorizos, plural, not chorizo, chorizos with an S. Don't know how that works. If he wants to go all out for a Friday evening feast or perhaps for a biscuit with his breakfast tea, for $2.95, he can get a honey bear. Up to two of those. So for $5.90, he can exhaust his honey bear ration for that day. So anyway, interesting. $1.90 Doritos Cool Ranch, $1.60 croissant, 90-cent dried onion flakes, just goes on and on and on, this entire page.
How much are pants? Because they seem to never wear pants. are there pants
For the Jeffrey Clark, if Jeffrey Clark, there are religious items. Here we go. Clothing, shower shoes, Nike sandal, bath towel, boxer brief. So Jeffrey Clark, if he goes down to Miami for $3.20, he can buy a pair of boxer briefs, three of them at any given time. Sweatpants are $19.50.
There we go.
So save up. He probably has a GoFundMe. You can donate $19.50 after Jeffrey heads to the Poke so he can buy himself a pair of sweatpants. Anyway,
sweatpants. Do they have Roger Stone's face on the butt? Like, do they have
Roger? I don't know. Roger Stone did nothing wrong.
Roger Stone did nothing wrong. Juicy. Well, at least they can buy pants. That's good to know, because for some reason, I don't know, they have a problem with pants over there on that side. Anyway, I'm very excited. Finally, somebody's going to prison. Yes, it's just for contempt of Congress for the January 6th committee, but well-deserved, Mr. Navarro. Enjoy your stay in the Poke. All right, we have more news to get to, but we have to take another quick break. Everybody, stick around. We'll be right back.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. That's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.
We're putting our foot down to keep our feet up, like way up, with Lazy Boy. Our phones will be set to do not disturb, our podcast to full volume, and our sofas to recline. After a full day of doing a lot of adulting, the only thing we'll be doing is a lot of nothing. It's all right to take time for our well-deserved lazy time. We, the lazy, are taking back lazy. All from the comfort of our Lazy Boy furniture. Lazy Boy. Long live the lazy.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. We have some new patrons to thank. Again, thank you, Becky Smith, Virginia Behrens, Julie Wortman, Evelyn Rollins, Marion Goldeen, Aya Maston, Gina Buresh. We appreciate you so much. Your contributions make a huge difference for MSW Media and for all of our shows. Thank you so much for your contributions. Thank you for supporting independent media. Thanks for supporting me and Pete, because we're fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what? I'm not ready to move on. I'm not ready to move on from Peter Navarro, because their hair care products that he can buy from the FCI Miami canteen for $1.40, he can get dandruff shampoo up to a maximum of $2. But if he doesn't want the generic, and if he wants Head and Shoulder shampoo, well, that's $7.65. He can get
Inflation
a 7-inch comb
is out of control.
7-inch comb for 85 cents. He can, for $5.05, get Dr. Miracle's braid relief.
Okay.
Or for 70 cents more, $5.75, Dr. Miracle's leave-in treatment. And he does have a little bit of hair, so perhaps if he wanted to not only shampoo it for another $2.40, he can buy himself some coconut hair conditioner. Again, I 4 months of entertainment, folks, on the Bureau of Prisons website, waiting for you when you get done listening.
Is there a public listing of things that he buys at the commissary? Because that would be fun to track that.
I suspect we might have to, like, Freedom of Information Act that. There may be some Privacy Act restriction on that, but you don't want to.
We could have a whole segment. What did Pete Navarro buy today? Twizzlers and some coconut hair conditioner. Fantastic. Let's take a quick trip out to Arizona, Pete, real quick. Well, we might come back to Miami before the show's over, but in Arizona, where the attorney general there has appointed a special prosecutor last May to investigate the fraudulent electors in that state, this new reporting comes from Politico. Arizona prosecutors in recent weeks issued grand jury subpoenas to multiple people linked to Donald Trump's 2020 campaign, which is a sharp acceleration of their criminal investigation into efforts to overturn Joe Biden's victory in the state of Arizona. The new steps, first reported here at Politico, they say, are a sign that Attorney General Chris Mays, a Democrat, is nearing a decision on whether to charge Trump's allies in the state, including GOP activists who falsely posed as presidential electors in December of 2020. Mays's investigators are scrutinizing the so-called alternate electors, the fraudulent electors, who signed paperwork falsely claiming that Trump had won the state. Prosecutors in Georgia, Michigan, and Nevada have already brought charges against pro-Trump fake electors in their states. And, you know, they did a settlement thing in Wisconsin. Pennsylvania got off the hook because they had contingency language on their certificate saying, we aren't the real deal. You only use us if Trump somehow wins a court case, which he never did. I think they did that in New Mexico as well, but they did not in Arizona. They said that they were the duly elected and certified electors in that state. Now, Mays's team has also asked people about Trump himself, as well as former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows and Trump attorney John Eastman and Kenneth Cheesebro. Cheesebro, an architect of Trump's scheme to organize the slates of false electors in six states won by Biden, pled guilty for his role in that scheme in Georgia and has quote unquote cooperated with investigators in Nevada, Michigan, and Wisconsin. He agreed late last year to speak to Arizona prosecutors as well. Wonder if he lied to them like he lied to everybody else, saying, I was just doing contingency stuff. I didn't know the extent of it until, you know, we uncovered his Badger Pundit secret Twitter account where he, you know, was saying that Pence should do the right thing and overturn the election. Now, Mays could be the final prosecutor to bring charges related to Trump's efforts to resist the 2020 election results. And it's of note here, the reason that she's a little bit behind is because she didn't get elected. She didn't take office until 2023, after the 2022 election. So she hasn't been there as long as the others. At the federal level, as we know, Special Counsel Jack Smith has charged Trump with conspiracy to disenfranchise millions of voters. And in Georgia, state prosecutors charged the former president and 18 of his allies with racketeering, a conspiracy to meddle in the election there. The attorneys general in Michigan and Nevada have also charged the Republicans who falsely claimed to be their electors, but not any of the architects of the fraudulent elector scheme.
So here's my question for you. Do you think in particular Michigan is done? Because they were super out in front. I mean, they were aggressive. They were, I think, the first to file against anybody at a state or federal level in any of the 2020 election shenanigans. And they also were kind of, you know, some question about like, well, we shared some of this with DOJ. And when they didn't do anything, we figured we needed to go out and do something. And I think Dana Nessel, the attorney general, actually made statements to that effect. In my mind, I'm wondering if they're finished. Like, are they still looking at these higher levels? Much like Fulton County is looking at the federal level, is Michigan doing that? And, you know, if not just Michigan, is Nevada going to do that? Is Arizona going to do that? I just wonder if we're going to see any other states go after national level figures.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, and even if they don't go after Trump himself, because they're leaving that to the feds or what, or to Fani Willis or whatever, are they going to do anything about Cheesebro? Now, we haven't had any reporting that Michigan has shut down this investigation or ended it. So I'm assuming it's ongoing because somebody would have said the grand jury has expired and she hasn't impaneled a new one, right? You know, are they going to look into Cheesebro for lying to him? Because he did. It looks like he at least grossly misrepresented himself in some of those states. So it's going to be interesting to see, because we know in Georgia, Fani Willis indicted everybody up to the top using the RICO statute. And in these other cases, there was a settlement in Wisconsin and in Nevada and Michigan, they only indicted the fraudulent electors. So it could be that perhaps they're waiting to see if they can flip any more of these electors to roll up on bigger fish, or if they have the information they need to indict people like Cheesebro and Eastman and Clark and everybody else who might have been involved in the fraudulent elector scheme. We don't know. But I'm assuming we would hear probably before the election, but there wouldn't be any trial, I think, that would go before the election for any of the higher ups. That's just my view.
Yeah, my hope has always been, and realistically, it's not going to happen because of the protections in place. But you'll remember that Ron Johnson, when they were trying to get him the fake elector stuff to pass to Pence, it wasn't just Wisconsin. It was Wisconsin and Michigan. And I had this hope that Michigan would use Michigan's voting law to go after Wisconsinite Ron Johnson and just say, look, speech and debate doesn't mean a goddamn thing. You violated state law and that. But I think that actually is not accurate, that it does implicate any sort of potential criminal violation at whatever level. But my hope, which I still cling to a candle in my heart, that Ron Johnson will get indicted in Michigan. But I don't know that that's going to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, and they also might be waiting. There might be speech or debate battles going on in court with the feds, and then the states might be waiting for that to be resolved before they move, at least on members of Congress. We know that privilege things were resolved with folks like Mark Meadows and what we called the Ocha Nostra, which was eight people like Nick Luna and, a bunch of eight people who were claiming executive privilege. And the feds fought that battle and won. And so they had to testify. I think they actually ended up giving Mark Meadows a little bit of immunity to testify. So there may just be privilege battles going on that are waiting to be resolved in these state cases as well. They went forward and filed the indictments all the way up the chain for RICO in Georgia. So I don't know. I don't know. But I think we'll get an indication of how far they're going to go up the chain once those grand juries are dismissed and not, renewed or re-impaneled or whatever the legal term of art is. So we'll see. We'll see what ends up happening.
Yeah. And let's go to, man, there's so much. If we had a map, and I don't know how to get visuals out on a podcast, but let's go to Delaware. And the reason I'm saying this is it's so to keep track of all the different moving parts. And we're going to go to get an update on David Weiss and his prosecution of Hunter Biden. But we've got that in Delaware. We've got Alexander Smirnoff, who is the Republican star witness who's heading to California for a trial. We've got New York. We've got Georgia. We've got that. We just talked about Arizona now in the mix. It is so hard doing this with you every week. So hard to keep track of it. I'm racking my brain for a good way to sort of recap at a high level for listeners just how much and how broad all the crime was that is being pursued.
We need one of those maps, where you can, if you've traveled to a state park or a national park and you can put a pin in it, we just need a map that says like where all the different trials are going on.
Yeah, this is crazy. So in Delaware now, for Hunter Biden's prosecution, the judge in that case has set a hearing date for Hunter Biden's motion to dismiss for today, Wednesday, March 13th. Her order says that a status telephone conference is set for Wednesday, March 13th at 4:30 p.m. Counsel should be prepared to discuss a trial schedule should the court deny the pending motions to dismiss the indictment. Dial-in credentials will be docketed prior to the call.
It sounds like she's going to dismiss Hunter Biden's motions Hunter Biden's motions to dismiss. She's like, be prepared to discuss a trial when all these are dismissed. If I dismiss them all, we'll see.
Yeah, although she could grant some and deny some. So look, even if she's like, look, I'm granting in part and denying in part, best case, he still might have. Again, I think those gun charges are the shakiest, particularly given recent Supreme Court rulings on Second Amendment rights that really kind of place into question the constitutionality of some of the gun charges. But that
maybe
doesn't mean that she
thing.
Can't deny some of the other motions. But you're right. I agree with you. If you're like, well, be prepared to discuss this schedule if I deny pending motions, kind of is like, I'm going to deny some of these pending motions.
Yeah, even if she doesn't think that the gun thing is constitutional or that it needs to be, we need to wait for the Supreme Court's ruling in that, then the other two are moot. I mean, the lying on the form thing. So maybe it could be the other way around. I'm going to not do the lying charges, but do the gun charges. We'll see. I mean, that hearing's today. We'll report on it when we know, tell you all in the next episode, or maybe if she rules from the bench, we'll be able to tell you on the bonus episode for patrons this weekend. Either way, we'll let you know. We do have to take another quick break. We have two more stories, but we have to get a word in from our sponsors. So everybody stick around. We'll be right back.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like.
X-Go, give it to you.
How about that?
That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience.
Acura wins Daytona!
And that, that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it?
Let's go, give it to you.
Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S.
Give up.
Order now at Acura.com.
We're starting a movement with Lazy Boy. Well, technically, it's more of a don't movement. We work full-time and parent full-time. Our feet will be in the upright position, and our podcasts will be listened to fully reclined. Now that we've completely checked off our to-do list, we'll be checking off our to-don't list until further notice. We, the lazy, are taking back lazy, all from the comfort of our Lazy Boy furniture. Lazy Boy. Long live the lazy.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey, welcome back. This is our last batch of new patrons to thank, and it includes Lauren, Rum Ham, Elise Pindo, Judy Hawkinson, Deez Legumes, I see what you did there, John Polacek, I'm still blaming Mitch.
Me too.
And so, yeah, yeah, fair enough. And he just endorsed Trump. He just endorsed, after everything, after constant crapping all over his wife with racial slurs, with misogynistic comments, and all these brave statements, Mitch McConnell nevertheless went out there and endorsed old Donnie as the Republican candidate for president of the United States. That'll teach him. That'll teach all of them. God bless America.
Yeah. So, Profiles in Cowardice, brought to you by Mitch McConnell.
Yeah. Well, we have two final stories to share today, including this. From none other than the Department of Justice website. A civilian employee of the U.S. Air Force assigned to the U.S. Strategic Command, or U.S. STRATCOM, at Offutt Air Force Base, and I'll return to Offutt Air Force Base here in a little bit, was arrested Saturday, March 2nd for allegedly conspiring to transmit and transmitting classified information relating to the National Defense Information, or NDI, on a foreign online dating platform beginning in or around February 2022 until in or around April 2022. According to the indictment, David Franklin Slater, 63, of Nebraska, worked in a classified space at U.S. STRATCOM and held a top secret security clearance from in or around August 2021 until in or around April 22, after retiring as lieutenant colonel from the U.S. Army. It is alleged that Slater willfully, improperly, and unlawfully transmitted NDI classified as secret, which he had reason to believe could be used to the injury of the United States or to the advantage of a foreign nation on a foreign online dating platform to a person not authorized to receive such information. According to the charging document, Slater attended U.S. STRATCOM briefings regarding Russia's war against Ukraine that were classified up to the top secret sensitive compartmented information, or TSSCI, level. Slater then transmitted classified NDI that he learned from those briefings via the foreign online dating website's messaging platform to his co-conspirator, who claimed to be a female living in Ukraine on the foreign dating website. The co-conspirator regularly asked Slater to provide her with sensitive, non-public, closely held, and classified NDI and called Slater in their messages her, quote, I swear to God, I'm not making this up, quote, secret informant love, unquote, and her, quote, secret agent. In response to these requests, Slater indeed provided classified NDI to her, including regarding military targets and Russian military capabilities relating to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Slater made his initial court appearance on March the 5th in the District of Nebraska. If convicted, Slater faces a maximum penalty of 10 years in prison, 3 years of supervised release, and a fine of up to $250,000 for each count of the conspiracy to transmit and the transmission of national defense information. A federal district court judge will determine any sentence after considering the U.S. sentencing guidelines and other statutory factors. Now, first, the Knights at Offutt Air Force Base in the middle of Nebraska can apparently get mighty lonely. Because I know, I'm certain you saw these, even at the VA, certainly in DOD, anywhere in the U.S. intelligence community, you literally cannot walk down a hallway longer than 20 feet without seeing a big poster saying, beware of, you know, a woman posing as a lover on an online chat forum. And it's got some sweaty Ivan with a wife beater and a cigarette sitting in a basement somewhere in St. Petersburg pretending to be some Ukrainian vixen. They are ubiquitous. They are everywhere. It is the bad joke of every time, every year, you have to sit down and you take operational security training or insider threat training or get your annual security briefing, because there are so many annual requirements for briefings. The first thing, the most hackneyed, overplayed, never going to happen, it's too outrageous, is the seductress online. Because who the hell is going to fall for that? The answer, apparently, is retired Lieutenant Colonel Slater, the secret agent, the secret informant love. Just lap that all up. And I, God almighty, we catch the dumb ones. But the only good thing about catching the dumb ones, beyond them being off the street, is their dumbness can be so horrifically amusing in the most aggravating and just bothersome way. It's a small measure of, it's kind of like, this is like the espionage version of Jeffrey Clark. It is approaching my little, all I can summon is, but God almighty, good for DOJ. Good for the FBI. They apparently shut this down after about 2 months. I don't know what happened. Well, no, I'm sorry, about a year, right? And what, August till April. So I guess that's about 9 months. You wonder what happened in April of 2022. You wonder what happened.
It's why, it's so dangerous to have these non-governmental weirdos just pop up in the government. Not this particular guy. He was a lieutenant colonel. It's unbelievable that he fell for the Ivan in a basement honeypot sitch. But, you remember Maria Butina? She dated, I think, four different guys in the Trump orbit. Erickson, who was responsible for changing some of the RNC platform language to go easy on Russia. With regard to Ukraine, she dated Patrick Byrne, the former Overstock CEO. We have duets of them singing Beauty and the Beast together, her and Paul Erickson. Just how many people she got to. Now she's
she at least she was there, right? And I can see she was a in-person little
real person
sitting in front of you, real person showering you, lavishing you with attention and everything. This, and again, I take it back. The allegations were he passed this information for about 2 months, from February until April of 2022. His clearance was held longer, but so February, March, April, three months. But what's interesting, and again, you can go find this in his indictment, it wasn't just the little things that she said. It's April 12th. These are her texts to him. Sweet Dave, her, quote unquote, again, as likely as not Igor in the basement somewhere in St. Petersburg, swinging down some vodka, quote, sweet Dave, the supply of weapons is completely classified, comma, which is great. March 18th, beloved Dave, do NATO and Biden have a secret plan to help us?
Beloved Dave.
March 23rd, 5 days after that, Dave, it's great that you get information about specified country first. She didn't say that. It's in brackets. The government redacted the name. She continues, I hope you will tell me right away, you are my secret agent. With love.
Oh, man. That's how I kick off all my love letters.
Well,
honestly, my dearest, where are the weapons?
And again, this is not Jack Teixeira, a maladjusted 19-year-old kid who is
a 63-year-old lieutenant colonel.
Colonel. An 05. Come on, man. March 11th. Dear, what is shown on the screens in the special room? ? It is very interesting. Oh, my God.
Interesting pillow talk. From
Ivan. We get the stupid ones.
St. Petersburg.
We get the stupid ones.
All right, check this out, our final story. On March 8th, Jamie Raskin, ranking member of the Committee on Oversight and Accountability, and Benny Thompson, ranking member of the Committee on Homeland Security, sent a letter to Jim Comer who we know is the chairman of the Committee on Oversight and Accountability, and Mark Green, chairman of the Committee of Homeland Security, urging them to reject the Department of Homeland Security Inspector General Joseph Kufari's attempts to evade oversight and accountability after repeatedly failing to comply with congressional Democrats' requests for documents and information regarding his mismanagement of the DHS OIG. That's the Department of Homeland Security Office of the Inspector General. Now, Kufari, you'll remember, is the guy who waited 18 months to say, oh, all of the Secret Service texts are missing, Congress. They just got deleted. We did a software update, oddly, on January 6th, and everything got lost. That's this guy, okay? Oh. He's the DHS office, he's the DHS Inspector General. Quote, on February 1st, 2024, this is in the letter, he received correspondence from the Department of Homeland Security Inspector General Joseph Kufari, in which he asked you to intervene in our investigation of him to prevent further interference by the ranking members. Inspector General Kufari's decision to direct his correspondence to you instead of us is a blatant and surprisingly churlish attempt to obstruct our oversight and raises serious concerns about whether he is in any way capable of acting as an independent and nonpartisan guy. It's actually an independent and nonpartisan way, as required by law of an inspector general. As chairman of our respective committees, we urge you to repudiate this strange, unprecedented, and petulant action by the head of an office of inspector general and assure us that you do not intend to condone or encourage Kufari's persistent failure to comply with our requests. That's what the ranking members wrote. By the way, Senate Democrats, you have a majority. You can deal with this. In August of 2023, in a letter to the chairman and ranking members, Inspector General Kufari responded to the ranking member's earlier letter and thanked the chairman's staff for, quote, confirming that I am not under investigation by your respective committees. Inspector General Kufari's admissions that he privately conferred with and sought counsel from Chairman Comer and Green's staff about the status of this investigation is an alarming breach of precedent by an inspector general who is supposed to be independent and nonpartisan. On January 25th, 2024, that's just a couple months ago, Raskin and Thompson sent a letter to DHS Inspector General Kufari renewing their call for his office to comply with congressional requests for documents and information into the use of taxpayer funds to settle claims of retaliation against him after evidence obtained by the committees revealed he may not have followed his office's procedures when he delegated authority to his chief of staff to sign a $1.17 million retaliation settlement against him. In response, on February 1st, 2024, Kufari sent a letter to Comer and Green falsely claiming that the DHS OIG was not under investigation because the oversight is not being conducted by the committee's majorities. In addition, IG Kufari incorrectly designated himself a whistleblower to shield himself from oversight, despite being the head of a federal agency and thus not covered by the Whistleblower Protection Act. You can't designate yourself a whistleblower under the WPA if you are the head of a federal agency. Given the unprecedented nature of the IG's absurd actions, ranking members Raskin and Thompson request Chairman Comer and Green's assurance that they are not participating in an invalid effort to impede this investigation into Kufari's gross mismanagement of the OIG. The committees have a longstanding investigation into Inspector General Kufari's poor leadership and gross mismanagement. Despite IG Kufari's repeated attempts to thwart meaningful oversight, the committees continue to seek accountability. So that's what's going on with the guy who sat on missing text messages for 18 months, which is when, by the way, after 18 months, they can be purged from the records per DHS rules, and said, oh my goodness, all the text messages from the Secret Service on January 6th are missing. My bad. Oops.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of nonsense going on. And the fact there already was, and then this allegation that he was, cooperating and communicating only with the majority staff and not with both sides just stinks to high hell. And look, there's a group called, I've always heard it pronounced SIGI, but it's the Council of the Inspectors General on Integrity and Efficiency. And essentially, it's a board of all these federal inspectors general that lay out sort of like standards across the IG community and ensure the ethics and, you know, proper functioning of the IGs. Horowitz used to be the chair. Now it looks like it's Mark Lee Greenblatt, who is the Department of Interior IG, and the vice chair, Tammy Hall, who is the Postal Service IG. Tammy and Mark, I've got a place for you to look, and it's this guy Kafari. Because this is nonsense. It was nonsense, the whole like, oh no, the text, no text, nope. January 6th, what happened? Did something happen on January 6th? Nah, well, we don't need any data.
Software update. Yeah, we had a software upgrade.
Come on. And this just smells. And so, you know, whether or not now he's trying to claim whistleblower protection for fear of criminal prosecution ought to be a blinking red light on somebody's radar. But come on, let's. Enough is enough. And again, this isn't like when we found it out back in, when did they say this came up? They were writing letters in August of 2023. So this was easily, you know, well before then. This is like January 6th committee was saying we weren't able to get this data. We've known about this now for years. Mm-hmm. And what's going on? Where's anybody? We got
anybody.
We got 10
Why are we
months.
Relying on ranking members?
We got 10 months before
the
next president is sworn in. 10 months. How scary is that? Where's the accountability for things that happened in the last administration?
I don't understand why.
It's the James Comer. Well, we're going to get to the bottom of it.
Look, we don't have the House. We don't have the majority in the House. They're ranking members. They don't have subpoena power. But we do in the Senate.
Dick Durbin.
We haven't had one single investigation into the insane bullshit that happened in the Trump administration in this Senate where we now have. And at first we had a power sharing agreement. It was a little difficult to get subpoena power because we were 50-50. But since we won that additional seat and we had 51, we haven't done anything. And I don't know why. And it's very frustrating. I keep asking and I keep getting, as an answer or no answer. So. Anyway, that's in today's segment of We Are Very Frustrated, that part of the show from Clean Up on All 45. But again, thank you to all of our patrons. We really appreciate you. We will have more to thank on the next episode. We'll be doing our bonus episode this weekend. That is for patrons at the $2 level. You get twice as many episodes if you're a patron at the $2 level. And we'll be talking about maybe what we learned in the hearing today. Hunter Biden thing. We have so many things to cover.
We'll know about Fulton County, which is making me more nervous than I hoped I would be. But
we should know about Fulton County. We'll probably get some sort of denial of immunity motions in New York for the Manhattan trial. We'll let y'all know either this weekend or on the next episode. But do you have any final thoughts, Pete?
No, I'm going to go back. I'm going to print out. We will scour because what I'm curious about now is if Peter Navarro can afford these things down.
How much are corn
FCI
nuts?
Miami. Corn nuts are there. I'm going to go figure out because presumably Jeffrey Clark at some point is going to have to, avail himself of some of these commissary items. And I'm curious if other places charge the same amount. Oreo cookies are 65 cents. You're limited to 10. An iced honey bun, $1.
Raisin 65 cents per cookie for Oreos?
I don't know, because that seems very cheap. If you were to get one of those six packs, that seems like a bargain. I would come out much heavier because I would say that is a deal on Oreo cookies.
You get 10 Oreos for $6.50.
What's the little packs? I thought those were six to eight.
But, yeah, I don't know. I think they're selling Lucy's. I think they're individual. Individual Oreos. Individually wrapped Oreos.
And for the upper crusty people, Laughing Cow Cheese, $4.05.
And there's a limit of 10, so you can't put a whole bunch of Oreos in a sock and beat somebody up, right? That's because why they limit these things, because they become dangerous in bulk. You can see Navarro running around swinging a sock full of Oreos. Collecting his Oreos over time, you know.
He can get a Velcro gray mesh cap for $6.50. Anyway, I'll stop.
Oh,
people are going to like, why are you still reading?
That's is it a snapback or a fitted cap? Do you think?
I don't know. And then a Scully for recreational, as opposed to clothing items, he can get for $2.60 a Scully cap.
I want one. Can I get a Miami correctional facility Scully? That's pretty cheap.
Yeah, I'm thinking we can probably send care packages down, which might be its own source of.
We could even embroider Navarro on it, like maybe go to 4imprint for certain, you know, and get little personalized embroidered commissary Scullies made for him.
It's possible. Anyway, we'll see you on Friday, patrons.
Yep, see you on Friday. Everybody check out the Daily Beans this week. Listen to the latest episode of the Jack podcast. There's a lot in there about Mar-a-Lago. And apparently tonight, which is Monday night, as we record this, there's going to be one of the co-conspirators, employee number 5, being interviewed by Caitlin Collins on CNN. And of course, as you hear this episode, it will have already happened. But you'll want to catch up on the Mar-a-Lago case. Listen to the Jack episode that's out this week. We go over a lot of the filings, responses to motions to dismiss, and his immunity motion, his Presidential Records Act motion. I almost said emotion, which is kind of what it is. It's really based on feelings and not the law. anyway, thank you so much, everybody. And we will see you next time. I've been Allison Gill.
And I'm Pete Strzok.
Clean Up on Aisle 45 is written, researched, and produced by Allison Gill, with editing by Molly Hockey. Our art and logo designer by Joelle Reeder and Moxie Design Studios, and our music is composed and performed by Adam Orr. Clean Up on Aisle 45 is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, visit mswmedia.com. MSW Media.
That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like.
X-Go, give it to you.
How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Biosonic sound experience. That's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it?
X-Go, give it to you.
Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S.
Give up.
Order now at Acura.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.